Well, good afternoon and welcome. I'm June Hewitt, and I serve as provost at Michigan State University. And today it is truly my honor to welcome back to campus the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Thomas Vilsack. I believe this is a third or fourth visit to MSU, and I'd like to point out that he is an honorary degree recipient, so he's back home today. And it is truly an honor also today to be able to welcome Brian Deese. Mr. Deese is President Obama's senior advisor on climate, conservation, and energy policy. We are particularly happy to have them here on campus today and to have this announcement, this conversation, because we would like to believe that MSU is not only in line with the values and the practices that we're going to talk about today, but that we stand as a university leader in some of these areas. We have made very serious commitments related to energy and waste reduction, transportation, water, and community engagement. We're moving forward quickly on renewable energy, reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And as many of you know from our announcement a couple of weeks ago, we will stop burning coal completely by 2016 after a 160-year history. We're pleased to be the venue today for this discussion about innovative opportunities to address these critical issues. I'd like to welcome, before I introduce Mr. Deese, some of our very special guests today. Our national and local USDA staff. We have Jim Johnson from the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, Kelly Fox from Senator Stabenow's office, MSU faculty and staff, MSU students, and of course our local community, all of whom have come today to be part of this important conversation. And that will be led today by Mr. Brian Deese, who currently serves as assistant to President Obama and his senior advisor. His duties include overseeing climate, conservation, and energy policy and advising the president on a range of domestic and international policy issues. Previously, Mr. Deese served as deputy director of the Office of Management and Budget, where he helped to oversee the development of the president's budgets, including their focus on economic growth and fostering opportunity for working families, and the president's efforts to deliver a smarter, more innovative, and more affordable government. Prior to the Office of Management and Budget, Mr. Deese served as deputy director of the National Economic Council. In this role, he was charged with coordinating policy development on several administrative economic priorities, including tax policy, financial regulation, housing, clean energy, manufacturing, and the automotive industry. Please join me in welcoming Brian Deese.
Thank you, Provost Hewitt, and to the MSU community for hosting us today for this important event. I want to thank all of you for joining us. And I'm very much looking forward to the conversations that we're going to have over the course of the day. I will say that as a native New Englander and a diehard New England Patriots fan, I will note that it was hard for me to break away from the White House today, because today is the day that the Patriots are joining the president at the White House. So it is a testament to the importance of this event and the issues that we're going to be talking about today. That I'm here today. I was thinking about the context today as I was coming in from the airport, and about the last time that I was here in Lansing. It was about 6 years ago, and it was just a few miles to the west at the state capitol, and I was there meeting with then Governor Granholm to talk about the crisis that was facing the auto industry and the state of Michigan. The unemployment rate in the state was approaching 14%. Nationally, we were losing hundreds of thousands of jobs every month. The economy was in free fall, and it was a frightening time across the upper Midwest of the United States. And so today, as I drove here for this event, things felt and looked very different, thanks to the grit and the resilience of workers across this state and across the country, thanks to the hard choices that that this president made, thanks to members of Congress, including many members of the Michigan delegation, we were able to pull out of the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. And I note with particular gratitude that the American auto industry, which was written off for dead by many during that period, has come roaring back. It's added over 500,000 jobs since that period. Factories across this state are back in production, producing new models that are winning accolades, and importantly showing the world that we in the United States can make cars that are more fuel efficient while putting more people back to work. And so it's on this foundation of economic progress that we come together today to talk about an ambitious set of steps that the Department of Agriculture, under the leadership of Secretary Vilsack, will be taking in partnership with farmers, ranchers, forest landowners, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and to fight climate change. And we'll get to the details of the announcement shortly, but I'd like to just start by putting today's announcement into the broader context of President Obama's commitment to addressing climate change. For all the heated rhetoric that you hear coming from Washington, D.C., climate change is fundamentally a practical and not a partisan issue for families and communities all over the country. It's a practical issue of health. Over the past three decades, the percentage of Americans with asthma has more than doubled. Climate change puts these individuals and many of our children at greater risk of landing in the hospital. Last week, I was with the deans of more than 30 top schools of medicine across the country. Their message was clear. Patients are already experiencing negative health impacts from a warming climate, and we must act to prevent more asthma attacks and more premature deaths. Climate change is a practical issue of our security. When the Pentagon calls climate change a, quote, threat multiplier, it's because climate change will put more demands on our military to respond to humanitarian crises in more challenging circumstances. And it's because some of our most vital coastal installations here in the United States are already being threatened by sea level rise. And climate change is a practical issue of economics. We already see economists and businesses from across the political spectrum agreeing that climate change is costing families and communities. And these costs are being felt right here. To quote the Risky Business Project, was an independent organization that has done really excellent work at trying to quantify the impacts of climate change. Quote, without significant adaptation on the part of Midwestern farmers, the region's thriving agricultural sector is likely to suffer yield losses and economic damages as temperatures rise. Now, part of that cost stems from the impact of longer and more intense heat waves on outdoor workers, including those in the agricultural sector. And this is no surprise to all of you in this room, but when temperatures increase from mild summer heat in the 75 to 80 degrees Fahrenheit range to extreme summer heat of around 95 degrees, a worker's ability to produce declines by almost an hour. And that lost productivity makes a huge difference for businesses large and small. And this is a local threat. Consider that, according to Risky Business, today the greater Detroit area experiences approximately 2 days of what's defined as extreme heat in a given year. On the current path, that number is projected to increase to 15 to 67 days by the end of this century, which would have devastating impacts on the region's agricultural sector and on the economy. This is also a national problem. Over the last decade, there have been over $300 billion in direct costs to the federal government due to extreme weather and fire alone. And that includes $61 billion in costs from crop insurance. And a last practical point on the economics. The longer we wait to address this challenge, the more it will cost to mitigate it. But in that challenge, there is an opportunity. Because if we look at the flip side of that coin, we can today reap the dividends of fighting climate change, and we have an opportunity to do so in a cost-effective manner. By cutting carbon pollution today, we can reduce the risk to our children and our economy, while also creating jobs and opportunity. Jobs expanding clean energy, boosting energy efficiency, building more resilient infrastructure across the country. And the good news is we know that this is doable. Consider that over the last 8 years in the United States, we've seen something quite remarkable. We have cut carbon pollution in the United States more than any other country on the planet, while at the same time experiencing the largest increase in production of oil and natural gas, as well as renewables and solar, of any other country. And indeed, at a global level, last year we saw something striking as well. For the first time in more than 40 years, global carbon pollution from the energy sector stayed flat, while the global economy grew by about 3%. So this is a powerful reason for optimism. We can fight climate change in a way that is good for our planet and good for our economy. To suggest otherwise presents a truly false choice. And that is exactly what the president has directed all of us to do. Already under his leadership, we've put forward historic standards that will double the distance that vehicles get from a gallon of gas. We've tripled wind power and increased solar by a factor of 10. We've created new market opportunities for efficient appliances and efficient buildings. We've designed rules to limit methane emissions from the oil and gas sector and to curb carbon pollution from existing power plants, which is the single biggest source of U.S. emissions. And we've set aside more public land and water than any president in history. These steps together form the basis of the formal target that we put forward last month to reduce emissions by 26% to 28% below 2005 levels by 2025. We made that commitment as part of an international process where countries like China are also stepping up and making historic commitments as well. All told, as part of that process, countries accounting for almost 60% of total carbon pollution from the energy sector have now made durable commitments to combating climate change and reducing their own emissions. So I'm here today with a clear message from the president that there is no greater threat to the planet from climate change. Its impacts are real and being felt all around us. We have an obligation to act, but we know that this is possible, and if we work together, this is solvable. And I'm also here to introduce Secretary Vilsack and to have a conversation about the Department of Agriculture's contribution to this incredibly important effort. For me, what Secretary Vilsack and USDA have been able to do, and that we can now memorialize in this announcement today, is an example of innovative policymaking and cost-effective solutions. They have found creative efforts across all of USDA's portfolio to identify voluntary and incentive-based programs that will increase the bottom lines of ranchers and farmers while reducing net greenhouse gas emissions. And to paraphrase our vice president, this is a big deal. Taken together, and as Secretary Vilsack will go into in more detail, these partnerships, this set of announcements today, will reduce emissions by more than 120 million metric tons of CO2. And that is a big number and somewhat hard to get your head around, but it is a quarter, roughly a quarter of the CO2 emissions that we project that we will get from putting in place our entire clean power plan, which is a foundational basis of our climate change effort. The astounding thing about this announcement is that it requires no new legislation, no new incremental expenditure of federal dollars. What it requires is creativity, commitment, and partnership. And I think that nobody in the federal government is more effective at finding at creativity, commitment, and partnership than our Secretary of Agriculture. So it gives me great pride to introduce Secretary Vilsack to talk about this innovative set of announcements.
Thank you very much.
Well, Brian, thank you very much. And I want to first and foremost acknowledge the provost. And we had a wonderful lunch together. And it is nice to be back. I want you to know that I had the Izzo basketball on my desk after Iowa State was eliminated, Northern Iowa was eliminated, Iowa was eliminated. That was my team. Almost. But it's great to be back to this great, great university. And it is, I think, fitting that I'm here to give this speech at Michigan State University because it has been a leader among universities in setting aggressive goals in the fields of energy and waste reduction, water, transportation, and community engagement. Since 2009 and the 2010 school year, MSU has reduced greenhouse gas emissions by an impressive 18%. And earlier this month, President Simon announced that the T.B. Simon power plant, which powers the university, is taking steps to stop burning coal by the end of 2016, as the provost indicated, and rely instead on natural gas and biofuels, an exciting new opportunity. And the university has also started work on a new anaerobic digester that will reuse waste from MSU's farms and dining halls to power buildings on campus. And these are both critical steps on the path towards a university and its stated goal of transitioning to 100% renewable energy and reducing its environmental impact and providing an extraordinary example for all of higher education throughout this country. And I want to thank Brian Deese, President Obama's senior advisor on climate conservation and energy policy, for traveling to Michigan today. As a Steeler fan, I have absolutely no concern about him missing the Patriots at the White House. So sorry, Brian, that got you absolutely no credibility here. But I will tell you that he has been an extraordinary leader in the administration and has been a problem solver. And every president needs a problem solver who works behind the scenes to make sure that government does everything it needs to and can do and ought to do to better the lives of the people of this great country. And no one has better served a president than Brian. So, Brian, it's certainly a pleasure and honor to be with you today. And I think I speak for Brian as well to say we are both excited about the opportunity later to sit down with a group of farmers and forest landowners to hear about the innovative practices that they are implementing in their operations that will have and are having an impact on climate change. Farmers and ranchers and forested landowners and managers here in Michigan and all across the United States are preparing for an uncertain future, something that producers obviously are aware of and appreciative of. But they see firsthand on the ground the growing threat that climate change and increasingly severe weather presents to agricultural production, forest resources, and rural economies. These folks face increased risks to their operations due to fires, increases in invasive pests and droughts and floods, and other extreme weather events. And the frequency and intensity of precipitation events have obviously increased significantly across the United States, and particularly in the eastern part of the U.S. And the wildfire season in the West is now 60 to 80 days longer than it was just 30 years ago. And the forests will become increasingly threatened by insect outbreaks, fire, drought, and storms over the next 50 years. 1 year ago, the White House released the third National Climate Assessment Report. And the authors of this report, 240 of the nation's leading scientists and experts, confirmed what our farmers and ranchers and producers see out in the fields every day. The climate is disruptive to agriculture, and that disruption is likely to increase over the next 40 years. They project that these disruptions will increase even more dramatically over the next 20 years. These events threaten the security of our food supply, and they have implications for every American. Rural America feels climate change impacts every single day, not just in the weather that surrounds rural Americans, but in their pocketbooks. Drought alone has estimated to cost this country $50 billion between 2011 and 2013, And that is a figure that is only going to increase as we deal with prolonged droughts in California and elsewhere. And so our farmers and ranchers and forest landowners and managers are on the forefront of keeping our land healthy, productive, and resilient. And they're not waiting. They're taking action now to protect their farms and their ranches and their forested areas. And they're not just taking this action to protect their bottom line. They're really taking it to preserve those operations for the generations of producers to come. And the USDA is there to support them and work with them. I'm proud of the fact that during this president's administration, we've enrolled a record number of acres of private working lands in our conservation programs. Over the past 6 years, working with over 500,000 farmers and ranchers implementing voluntary conservation practices, we now are impacting positively over 400 million acres. Soil erosion is down by 278 million tons of soil that's been saved. Nitrogen in runoff from farm fields has been reduced by over 3.5 billion pounds. And over the last 6 years, phosphorus runout has been reduced by 700 million pounds. USDA has also helped to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by over 360 million metric tons since 2009. That's approximately 60 million metric tons per year. This is equivalent of taking about 12.5 million cars off the road for a year, or the energy that it takes to provide energy and light for 5.4 million homes in the U.S. Now, to drive our economic growth in the future and help to reduce our reliance on foreign oil and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we're going to continue to aggressively pursue investments in renewable energy as well. We've incentivized the shift from fossil-based energy to renewable sources in rural communities all across the United States. Over the past 6 years, we've invested in over 9,000 projects, working with thousands of rural small businesses and farmers and ranchers to install renewable energy systems and energy efficiency solutions. Those systems and solutions will generate and save more than 9.4 billion kilowatt hours of energy, and that's enough energy to power 820,000 American homes on an annual basis. And according to the 2012 Census of Agriculture, over 57,000 farms are now reporting using renewable energy in their farming operations. That's more than double the number of operations just 5 or 6 years ago. And we're working with farmers and ranchers and forest owners to generate homegrown renewable energy, including biofuels and bioenergy. The Biomass Crop Assistance Program has provided incentives to more than 850 growers and impacting nearly 48,000 acres of land to establish and produce dedicated non-food energy crops for delivery to energy conversion facilities. Working together, we've accelerated the development of advanced biofuels for a wide range of applications, from filling our tanks at the pump to fueling commercial aircraft to even powering our military. And we've provided nearly $1 billion to support 238 wood-to-energy projects, which will also generate renewable fuels while also advancing our forest restoration goals. We've been busy in the research space as well. We've invested more than $610 million in research by USDA scientists and partners at land-grant universities like this great land-grant university to develop innovative climate solutions and tools that could be applied on the forest and on the farm. And our network of regional climate hubs, established last year and located all across the country, are helping to disseminate tools and information to producers so that they can tailor responses to mitigate and adapt to a changing climate. One of those hubs is located right here in northern Michigan, and it assists resource managers, woodland owners, and others to integrate climate change information into their planning, decision-making, and management activities. Producers themselves have taken the lead in implementing cutting-edge conservation and stewardship practices on their operations. Myron Ortner, who is from, Tuscola, close enough, Michigan, as partner. He's not here today, so he's not, unfortunately, his wife is not well. Otherwise, he would be here. But he has partnered with Michigan State University and the nonprofit Delta Institute to reduce nitrogen fertilizer on his 40 acres of corn and soybeans by nearly 15%. And the reason why we wanted to showcase Myron's effort is because this is an example of how a farm can serve as a model for a new kind of nutrient management program throughout the Corn Belt, one that brings farmers and research institutions, nonprofits and government, and business together to make climate solutions actually work. The Delta Institute was able to support Myron thanks in part to a USDA Conservation Innovation Grant, which through carbon credit protocols allows farmers and ranchers to benefit financially from the implementation of carbon-friendly practices on their operations. The point doesn't necessarily have to be impacting negatively your bottom line. Farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners and managers are in the climate solutions business. They're producing biofuels. They're installing renewable energy systems on their operations. They're conducting climate research and innovation. They're implementing the latest conservation techniques. And they are driving the development of the most critical components in our fight in rural America against the impacts of climate change. They're doing their part, and USDA is partnering with them. We're working together to adapt to the impacts of climate change. And we're going to continue to provide help and assistance to buffer and protect producers from weather-related risks through disaster programs when the weather doesn't necessarily cooperate. Just in the last year, our Farm Service Agency offices have sent out over 600,000 checks, totaling over $5.2 billion to livestock producers who have been impacted by drought and by storms connected to a changing climate. But as the rate of climate change accelerates and the impacts become more prevalent, farmers and ranchers will need new tools and techniques to protect their bottom line and to ensure the future food security of our nation. They'll need more support from us at USDA, from our outside partners and organizations, and from each other. That's why, in support of Myron and hundreds of thousands of producers like him around the country, I'm announcing today a series of 10 building blocks for climate-smart agriculture and forestry. This is an ambitious but voluntary strategy that rewards and incents and builds upon the good work that's already being done by our farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners. The goal is ambitious, but as Brian indicated, doable. Reducing emissions by the equivalent of 120 million metric tons of CO2 per year by the year 2025. That's essentially doubling the current emission reductions that we've seen recently. This strategy will use existing USDA programs to provide financial and technical assistance to support producers as they work to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, to generate more clean, renewable energy, and increase carbon sequestration. Strategy will be held accountable because it sets achievable benchmarks. It lays out the foundation for agriculture and forestry to be more publicly visible as part of the climate change solution for the country. The plan better measures and shows the world how America's farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners are already successfully using climate-friendly conservation practices to benefit the environment, individual farms and forest operations, and our economy as a whole. It will give all of them a mechanism to do even more, and as importantly, it gives them credit for the work that they're doing. The strategy is divided into 10 building blocks that focus on agriculture and forestry practices that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and increase carbon sequestration, as well as making improvements to energy efficiency and renewable energy production. These practices revolve around soil health, nitrogen stewardship, livestock partnerships, the conservation of sensitive lands, grazing and pasture lands, private forest growth and retention, stewardship of federal forests, promotion of wood products, urban forests, and finally, energy generation and efficiency. Now, under this strategy in soil health, we'll focus on working with producers to improve soil resiliency and increase producer profits by promoting changes in tillage, planting cover crops, planting perennial forages, managing organic inputs and compost application, and alleviating compaction. USDA initiated its soil health campaign in October of 2012, and it's drawing renewed attention to farmers and ranchers across the nation using techniques today to improve soil health. Building on this campaign and continuing to do what we have done, we're now setting a new goal for increasing no-till implementation from its current 67 million acres to over 100 million acres by 2025. We're also going to aim to reduce fertilizer-related nitrous oxide emissions from their 2000 levels by 10% by 2025. We're going to focus on the right time, the right type, the right placement, the right application method, and the right rate of nitrogen fertilizer. In doing so, we'll reduce runoff and we'll also provide cost savings to producers through efficient application. Under President Obama's Climate Action Plan, USDA and the dairy industry have been active. They've developed together a biogas opportunities roadmap, which outlines voluntary strategies to spur the development of a robust biogas industry in the U.S. To date, pursuant to that strategy and working with the industry, USDA has already supported 93 anaerobic digesters to help farm operations produce electricity from captured methane. But we want to do and need to do more. The new strategy will set a goal of reducing methane emissions by installing 500 new anaerobic digesters over the next 10 years and supporting the installation of lagoon covers to reduce methane emissions of at least 10% of our swine and dairy operations. We look forward to working with producers using the Conservation Reserve Program and the new Agricultural Conservation Easement Program to reduce greenhouse gas emissions through riparian buffers, wetlands, and organic soils. By 2025, USDA aims to enroll 400,000 acres of CRP land with high greenhouse gas benefits. We aim to protect 40,000 more acres through easements and gain additional benefits by transferring expiring CRP acres to permanent easements. We and the livestock producers will also work together to support proper grazing management on an additional 4 million acres of pasture and grazing lands throughout the U.S., which will allow us to reach a total of 20 million acres involved in those new and appropriate grazing management practices by the year 2025. And using the Forest Legacy Program and the Community Forest and Open Space Conservation Program, we've set a goal to protect almost 1 million additional acres of working landscapes. And employing the Forest Stewardship Program, we look to cover an average of 2.1 million acres annually, in addition to the 26 million acres that are already covered by active plans today. We'll work across the country to reforest areas damaged by wildfire, insects or diseases, and restore forests to increase their resilience to these disturbances. We've set as a goal replanting over 400,000 acres of national forest land over the next 10 years, restoring and strengthening the country's forest carbon stock. And USDA has led the way in demonstrating the innovative uses of wood and other bio-based products that reduce emissions and increase carbon storage. Under our new voluntary strategy, we're going to work hard to increase the use of wood as a building material to store additional carbon in buildings while offsetting the use of energy from fossil fuels. Through our partnership with Woodworks, USDA aims to increase the number of wood building projects supported through our technical assistance from the current level of 280 to over 2,000 in the year 2025. We're encouraging tree planting in urban areas to reduce energy costs, stormwater runoff, and urban heat island effects while increasing carbon sequestration, curb appeal, and property values. In partnership with the Arbor Days Foundation Energy Saving Trees Program and landowners, we look to plant an additional 100,000 trees in urban areas over the next decade. And I should say these goals are all floors. They are not necessarily the ceiling. We're going to build on the good work of farmers and ranchers and homeowners to install renewable energy technologies and improve energy efficiency in rural communities. USDA plans to use our existing energy loan program and our grant program to support the construction of new electric distribution, transmission, and generation facilities relying on renewable energy. We're going to make system improvements and upgrades at existing electric facilities to create more efficient systems. We'll support demand-side management, energy efficiency, and conservation improvements. And we look to install on and off grid renewable energy systems, all of which reduce the greenhouse gas impact of energy generation in rural areas. Just this week, we announced $20 million of assistance for a number of solar projects. And yesterday, I was at the George Washington Carver Center, which is the facility owned by the USDA in the Capital area, to cut the ribbon and flip the switch on the largest solar facility of its kind, federally owned, in the National Capital area. Roughly 6.2 acres of solar panels that will provide almost 20% of the complex's energy needs in the future and save the department $300,000 annually. Our efforts to implement this strategy at USDA are already underway, but the bulk of the work is obviously ahead of us. Over the next few months, we'll work across the department to lay out a pathway with specific mileposts and goals on an annual and quarterly basis for achieving our goals. We can't accomplish our goals without the support and participation of forward-thinking producers and landowners who are setting their personal bar high in conservation leadership. Producers in this country have a track record of rising to a challenge, and this challenge will be no different. Now, this strategy accomplishes three basic goals. First, it does and should recognize and reward farmers, ranchers, and foresters for already doing what they're doing. It now gives them access to additional resources and assistance that they will need to reap the economic and environmental benefits that come from improving efficiency, increasing yields, and reducing the risks to their operations. Second, through these voluntary actions by the agriculture and forestry sectors of our economy, we expect to reduce net greenhouse gas emissions and carbon sequestration by over the goal of 120 million metric tons of CO2 equivalent by 2025. Now, certainly the agriculture and forestry communities aren't alone, nor should they be, in addressing the challenge of climate change. President Obama has laid out an ambitious goal for all of us, that by 2025, the United States of America will reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by 26% to 28% below 2005 levels. This is an economy-wide and national commitment, comprising the U.S. contribution to a global effort to address climate change, and will form the cornerstone of a post-2020 international climate agreement. So as to a final goal of our strategy, this further positions the United States and our producers as global leaders in climate-smart agriculture and forestry, matching their global leadership in productivity. It demonstrates to the world that these sectors are already global leaders in sustainable land management and efficiency production systems, while also proving that you can simultaneously boost productivity to meet the growing demand for food and fiber, which will also stimulate our rural economy while offering compatible environmental and economic benefits. Well, today we have an audience of a group of producers and stakeholders that we'll be visiting with who've made a wide variety of commitments themselves, from implementing innovative practices on farm to making private investments in renewable energy generation. Over 28 organizations contributed early actions to work with farm and forest landowners by bringing private capital to carbon sequestration and greenhouse gas reduction in America. And I'm certain that our continued broad-based support for agriculture and the forestry sector will allow us again, to be leaders in this fight. One example is Equilibrium Capital Group, who will kick off its wastewater opportunity strategy today. This is an effort to accelerate the development and growth of biodigesters and biogas facilities that convert food and farm waste into productive economic value in rural communities. Part one of their strategy is expected to process over 150 million gallons of wastewater per year, which will generate over 350 million kilowatt hours of renewable energy equivalent, which was also reducing 2 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions. Even more, the first phase is expected to produce 2 million hours of employment for skilled construction workers and approximately 130 permanent jobs. It will also strengthen farms and food processing facilities, which will be located in up to 35 communities, which will obviously contribute to the rural economy. This voluntary strategy is an initiative designed precisely for working farms and ranches and forests and production systems. It encourages action that enhances productivity while avoiding action that might inhibit production. USDA has a long history of what we like to refer to as cooperative conservation and partnership with our farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners. And we vow to continue to use these principles to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture and forestry sectors. Over the next decade, Americans from all walks of life will face the growing challenge of a changing climate. In order to address climate change, we have to get ahead of it. And no one innovates better, responds to a challenge better than the folks who live, work, and raise their families in rural America. It's not going to be an easy task, but I am confident, and our president is confident, that working together, American agriculture and the nation's forests can continue to play an important role in reducing greenhouse gas emissions and increasing carbon storage in our forests and soils. Earlier today, I was looking at a series of quotes from Aldo Leopold, and it struck me that this quote summarizes the important work that we're about. Referencing the land ethic, Leopold said, "The land ethic simply enlarges the boundaries of the community to include our soil, our water, our plants, and our animals as collectively the land." In short, a land ethic changes the role of people from conquerors of the land and community to plain members and citizens. It implies respect for fellow members and an absolute respect for the community as such. The action we take today reflects that land ethic that is alive and well in farms and ranches and forest areas throughout this country. And I'm excited about the future, and I look forward to USDA's role in helping us meet and exceeding these goals. Thank you very much.